Chapter 10. Terms of Surrender. Okay, he admitted it. Things were looking pretty bad. Around him, klaxons were screaming because Chris had placed the ship under red alert. This meant everyone on board the vessel now knew there was danger. From the onset, they prepared the crew and the civilians for what to do in such an emergency. Drills were conducted to ensure no one would be at a loss over where they should be during an attack like this. Even though Chris could not see them, he knew at this moment Josiah and Nathan were taking care of those formalities. Even as they spoke across the bridge, the emergency lighting dimmed for the coming battle. Chris could not be sure whether it was to conserve power or some other tactic devised by Starfleet shipbuilders. All he could be sure of was that the sensors were screaming at the large body of ships on an intercept course. Long-range scanners pinpointed the vessel when they dropped their shields and converged upon the lone Galaxy-class ship. Across the bridge, the tension was so thick they could slice it through with a knife, but no one made any comment. Everyone was too busy with their own jobs to worry about the enemy fleet. 10 minutes seemed like an eternity when the Maverick faced what was coming at them at warp speed. Engineering, come in.
Pemberton's here.
I want you to put all power to our shields, reinforce them if you like, but I want every spare gigawatt of energy diverted. Power down unoccupied decks if you have to, but get me every bit you can. We're going to have to keep our shields up at all costs. If I know the strategy, they will try to board us. We have to keep that from happening.
Just like the Rutherford, sir. I'll give you everything we've got.
Chris allowed himself a slight smile, remembering that young lieutenant who kept his ship together long enough for him to help Picard defeat the Borg. Thanks to Julia Pemberton's ingenuity and sheer determination in engineering, the Rutherford fought her last battle with honor and distinction. Chris hoped it would not come to that with the Maverick.
Understood. Good luck, Lieutenant.
To all of us, Captain. Pemberton out.
Luck.
Chris turned to his first officer, conferring with JD at the communications station.
How are we with getting a distress signal through?
As expected.
Buck looked over his shoulder long enough to respond.
They're jamming us on normal subspace. JD and I are trying to piggyback a signal on a tachyon burst. It will take a little longer to get to Starfleet, but at least it will get through their jamming net.
I'll take what I can get. How much time do we have?
4 minutes.
Alex answered. She had taken on monitoring the sensor array since Ezra was now required at tactical. He was also coordinating his security team to get the civilians to safety and defend against the Jem'Hadar if they attempted to board the Maverick. On top of all of this, he would soon be required to man the ship's arsenal when the shooting started.
Ezra,
Chris swiveled around in his chair and faced the security officer.
I want a security detail to find Gol Lamar and put him in the brig. I wouldn't want him to make any separate deals when the fun starts.
He did not know how far Lamar's complicity went, but Chris wanted him out of the way where he could be of no further aggravation during this crisis.
Gladly.
Ezra exchanged a look with Alex, feeling inwardly perhaps the day would not turn out so badly after all.
Then,
Chris faced front again, running through all the preparations he had to make with the remaining 4 minutes.
I need an escape route for us in case we have to make a run for it. We'll take on as many of them as we can, but we're not coming out of this unscathed. Starfleet recalled a few ships from the front lines to help us in case this happened, but they were days away last I heard. We need to find some place we can hide for a good amount of time if necessary.
I'm on it.
Vin was already running through the possibilities in his mind. Chris took a deep breath and finally regarded the one person he had avoided since this all began. He wished she was not here because the chances of surviving this were not good. And considering what Alex suffered, Chris's stomach knotted with disgust at the thought of such a fate befalling Mary. Still, as much as he wished her off the bridge, he was also glad she was at his side. If this was the end, they would face it together.
Mary, if you want to leave the bridge.
No.
She put her finger to his lips and shook her head in response.
My place is here with you.
Chris nodded and interlaced his fingers through hers for a few seconds, because a few seconds was all they had. Nothing else needed to be said, and he knew it was pointless to convince her to leave. She would never listen, and he really did not have the time to waste on such a futile exercise. The bridge came alive with a new sound that was not so different from the klaxons already wailing throughout the bridge like a banshee in the night. He did not need to be told what it was. It could only be one thing.
Proximity
the convoy
alert.
Was finally in sight. The customary greetings and hails between ships approaching each other in space did not materialize,
further proving the enemy's hostile intent.
Captain?
Ezra exclaimed.
Someone just activated a transponder signal.
What? Chris stood up and whirled around in his chair.
Lemma.
Alex swore when she discovered its source. Shields up. Chris ordered but knew it was a wasted effort. Lamar probably activated it to get off the ship before he was trapped.
I knew that son of a bitch was playing us.
Alex cursed herself for not killing him when she had the chance.
Get over it. He's gone, and we have bigger problems than one Cardassian traitor.
Still, Chris made a silent promise to himself that he and Gul Lamar were going to meet one last time before this was all over. Putting the thought in a nice safe place for the moment, Chris glanced at the view screen showing the first signs of the approaching ships in the darkness of space. They were little more than specks of light right now, but they were soon going to be larger than life.
All right.
Chris stood up and let his eyes roam over the faces of everyone on the bridge with him, even Mary.
We are outnumbered and it's likely we won't have much chance to run. They'll almost certainly try to surround us, so I'm giving you fair warning. Prepare yourself. This is going to be bloody. Our biggest threat is the Warbird. She can cloak, and she has firepower equal to our own. She'll come at us head-on while the Cardassian warships pick at us with the Jem'Hadar keeping us netted.
Chris took in a deep breath as he saw the somber expressions on the faces of his subordinates and declared,
"We have one advantage. They need to take the ship intact. They have to if they want what's on the main computer. That is our biggest asset and I can use it to our advantage. However, to get the Maverick, they have to collapse our shields and board us. As senior officers on this ship, we will not allow that to happen. I have a couple of tricks up my sleeve that will make it a little harder than they thought. We're not as outgunned as they think, but we're still vulnerable. If they even attempt to take the bridge, we will self-destruct this ship before we let that happen. If you think that 1,000 people are a sacrifice, then think in terms of the billions facing slavery and death if the Dominion gets its hands on a fresh supply of white."
The others nodded in understanding of the order he had just given them, even if he did not come out and say it. They all knew what Chris meant, and they all knew that if the time came, they would be equal to the task. 1,000 souls on the Maverick was a small price to pay for the security of the Alpha Quadrant and United Federation of Planets.
All right,
Chris said as he lowered himself into his command chair and faced the view screen once more.
Hail them.
The Warbird commander addressed the captain of the Maverick when communications were established between the two ships. Of course, it was not a Romulan staring at Chris through the viewer, but a Vorta. Chris supposed it was expected when one engaged a Dominion attack force. No sooner than the Warbird had taken position directly at the bow of the Maverick, the Cardassians' battlecruisers took up flanking positions. At the same time, the Jem'Hadar warships remained at a fallback position, where they would join the fight should the need arise.
Captain Larrabee,
the Vorta said with typical politeness, just a hint above groveling. Apparently, it was their natural state, Chris was told. They were not an overtly violent or aggressive race, always feigning subservience to the Founders when committing all kinds of atrocities against other species. Chris supposed it was one way to let themselves sleep at night.
I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Chris showed no hint of fear as he stared at the enemy, appearing utterly indifferent to the odds his ship and his crew were facing.
I am Fanaean of the Dominion Empire.
The Vorta introduced himself with a sickening smile of courtesy and reminded everyone on the bridge of a weasel.
I am here to offer you a proposal.
A deal.
The captain was not fooled by this thin veneer of civility. It was only foreplay to the battle about to be wrought.
How interesting. You often conduct proposals with a fleet covering your back.
Once again, there was no hostility in Chris's voice, and the bridge crew found themselves singularly impressed by the captain's ability to appear completely unfazed by what was happening. Not even Ezra was that good.
Considering we have to make our proposal in what is clearly Federation space, it seemed a necessary precaution.
Fanaean responded as if it were the most natural thing in the world to bring an attack force behind enemy lines and attack a ship full of civilians.
Naturally. Nevertheless, I would prefer your Cardassian allies withdraw from the immediate vicinity. Considering the current state of war between our governments, I might take their presence to be a little provocative.
Unfortunately, that is quite impossible.
The Vorta replied, conscious the human was dancing around the issue just as the captain was aware of the gun aimed at him, with diplomacy masking the first shot.
The frontier is such an unsafe place. We would like to offer you our help in returning your crew to a starbase.
Chris exchanged a glance with Buck, who was just as nauseated by the Vorta's smarmy tone.
And what would be the payment for this little escort?
The Vorta smiled like a child caught attempting to play a prank on someone who knew better.
Why, nothing exorbitant. Perhaps the entire contents of your computer core. The Dominion would find it very useful if we had access to all your data involving stellar cartography and geological analysis of planetary bodies in this sector.
And one other thing.
A familiar voice entered the fray, prompting the Vorta to glance sideways in annoyance. Even though they did not see the speaker, every Bridge member recognized the voice and was frankly unsurprised by the turn of events. Gull Lamar stepped into view with a satisfied smirk on his face, knowing he could now demand everything denied him when he was on board the Maverick.
You know Gull Lamar.
Chris looked at Alex for a second before he faced the viewer again. The science officer's expression was unreadable, but there was something in her eyes the captain recognized for what it was. Calculation. There was calculation in her eyes, and, considering their present situation, Chris wondered whether she meant it for their enemy or only Lamar. A question that could be answered later, he decided. If they live through this.
I should have had you spaced when you first came on board my ship.
Alas, you did not.
Lamar wore a look of supreme confidence now he had the weight of a Dominion fleet behind him.
What the Vorta is too polite to say, Captain, is that we expect your unconditional surrender or we'll take the Maverick. The only way you can save yourselves is to download the entire contents of the Maverick main computer into our ship, or we will destroy you.
Is that all? I seem to recall that you wanted something else. Care to let me in on what that might be?
Yes.
Lamar smiled evilly.
You will transport the charming Lieutenant Travis and Commander Stiles to the Tasmim immediately, or we will blow your ship out of the sky.
Son of a bitch!
Buck exclaimed in rage as he saw Mary turn ashen. Alex held firm because she knew her captain, and even in the unlikely chance they forced her to go, she knew she would never arrive on the Tasmim alive to suffer any repeated brutalities at Lamar's hands. When Alex told Vin she would die before she went through that hell again, Alex meant it.
Stand down, Commander.
Buck sat down on his command chair again, sharing the same outrage as the rest of the male officers. While no one could see Vin's eyes because his back was facing all of them, Buck could imagine the fury running through the Vulcan at this moment. Ezra's calm demeanor wavered, the contempt in his eyes was intense enough to penetrate his usual poker face. JD was biting down, his jaw tensing in bitter anger.
Fanayan!
Chris turned back to the viewer once he dealt with his second in command as if bored by the whole affair. Secretly, if Lamar was within reach, the man would have felt Chris's displeasure most profoundly.
These negotiations will go more smoothly if I can deal with someone who is in actual authority. Our current situation is fragile enough without underlings with delusions of grandeur making unreasonable demands that will never be accepted. We may be able to negotiate for the information, but I will give none of my crew to that Cardassian to practice his clumsy mating techniques.
I will see you beg.
Lamar sputtered with fury.
Shut up, Lamar.
Frenayan remarked with enough force in his voice to let even one as thick-headed as the Gull know the price for disobedience. Behind Chris, the rest of the Bridge crew silently applauded the captain's masterful handling of Lamar, although they were nowhere out of trouble. Whatever negotiations Chris intended to conduct with the Vorta would be short-lived. Chris would never give up the Maverick. Lamar seemed livid as he was more or less disregarded and shunted aside once the Vorta had reason to believe Chris might cooperate and hand over the ship peacefully. Of course, they all knew what the captain was doing. He was stalling for time. At this moment, JD was relaying top-secret codes received from Starfleet at the onset of this mission to the tactical station.
Time?
Buck whispered after he left his chair and stood near the young man's station.
30 seconds to complete the upload.
Buck then retreated to the tactical station next to Ezra while Chris continued the game of thrust and parry with the Vorta.
Ezra, wait for the captain's mark.
From her station, Alex added.
The Cardassians are powering their weapons. They're targeting us.
No surprise there. What about the Jem'Hadar ships?
They're standing by.
They know we got to get through the Cardassians before they need to make a move. They'll sit back and watch until it's time to engage.
Vin looked over his shoulder and shot Buck a look, giving him the signal he had put the captain's orders into effect. The course to the Vicari's quasar was laid in and awaiting his command. Buck was glad, but he had a feeling getting there would be a long shot.
Captain,
the Vorta said finally.
We do not really need your permission.
The man was attempting to appeal to Chris's sense of self-preservation. If he only knew what it was to earn a Starfleet uniform, Chris thought silently, the Vorta would have understood what a futile gesture it was.
We can take your ship.
And I can order her destroyed into a billion particles of dust before you ever got your hands on her.
Chris answered back, guessing the sands of diplomacy were running its course.
You wouldn't dare.
Finian bit back, not liking that idea at all. The destruction of the Maverick would mean a complete failure of their mission, and the Founders did not forgive such disasters.
Before I let any of your Cardassian pets touch one woman on the Maverick, I will throw the switch and blow the ship to smithereens, and there won't be a man on my crew who will lift a finger to stop me. So,
Chris leaned forward in his command chair.
I have only one thing to say to you, Finian.
And what is that?
Catch us if you can.
Chapter 11. Ramming speed. Chris needed to level the playing field. Despite the tremendous odds facing the Maverick, Chris knew he could get his ship and crew out of danger if he had a little room to maneuver. Unfortunately, there was little chance of that with the Cardassians outflanking them, preparing to bombard them with phaser blasts. They would not be so bold if the Jem'Hadar weren't there to pull their fat out of the fire if they got in over their heads. Nevertheless, the Jem'Hadar were there, content to fall back and let the Cardassians handle things until their intervention was necessary. That left only the Warbird, preparing to square off with the lone Federation ship. Chris could take the Romulan and handle the Jem'Hadar, but the Cardassians? They were plain pissing him off.
The Cardassians are firing.
The announcement came from Alex a few seconds after he challenged the Warbird commander. Obviously, the Cardis had decided diplomacy would not work in convincing the Maverick to capitulate. Everyone felt the blast across the ship that revealed a battle had begun. The force of it threw Buck and Mary to the floor. Chris barely remained seated, digging his nails into the cushioned armrest. Others were not so lucky. Alex slammed against the wall while JD was nearly flung from his seat. Anything unbolted went flying, and the clatter of beverage cups and other various items rained down around their ears. He covered his head with his arms, narrowly avoiding being hit by someone's mug. Klaxons shrilled across the ship with alarm indicators flashing crimson. Buck found it difficult to stand, unable to get his footing right. The explosion disorientated all of them, and quickly he realized he was off balance because he twisted his ankle badly. Chris immediately grabbed his first officer by the arm and helped him back into his seat. Mary brushed loose strands of her hair out of her face and gave him a nod of assurance she did not need any help as she took her place next to him again. The others struggled back to their seats and knew the reason the ship had taken a hit so badly was that all five vessels fired at once. No doubt to impress upon the Federation starship how hopelessly outnumbered they were. Bullies, Chris snorted silently to himself. That's all the Cardassians were. Bullies.
Our shields are holding,
Ezra stated from his console.
They did that to shake us up and scare us into surrendering. Finian thinks if we're frightened by their numbers, we might save them the trouble of fighting.
In his command chair, the captain promised himself these were the last free shots the Cardassians were going to get at the expense of the Maverick. From this point on, the enemy was going to learn the hard way, numbers or not, what it would cost to take Chris Larrabee's ship.
Captain,
JD spoke up.
The Tasmim is hailing us again. They probably think we're more ready to talk.
Buck grimaced as he shifted in his seat, trying to take the weight off his injured foot.
You okay?
Chris noticed his attempts to become more comfortable with his injury.
I'm fine.
Buck waved away the inquiry. His foot was throbbing painfully, and he could feel the swelling, but under no circumstances was he leaving his captain.
You'll have time to make it to sickbay, I promise.
Buck recognized the glint of the Larrabee hat trick in Chris's eyes. Buck coined the term during their academy days because it meant Chris was about to pull off a game changer. It could be scary as hell, but worth the effort if you knew how to ride it out. Buck had a premonition things were about to get very rough, not because the Dominion was out there but because Chris Larrabee was about to get very crazy.
Are we gonna talk to them?
We are, but I doubt they're going to like what I have to say, though. Open a channel and stand by, Ensign.
You're going to talk to them?
Mary asked incredulously, forgetting herself for a moment because the situation was critical. and she was more than a little afraid of the odds before them. She had never really been in combat like this before, and she could not deny she felt a little out of her depth. She stayed because she was a bridge officer, and despite Chris's feelings for her, she would not take advantage of his affection by being in a safer place to wait out the attack. "It would be rude if we didn't," Chris gave her a little wink before standing up and turning his attention to Ezra.
"First things first. Are we ready with our little surprise for the Cardassians?"
"Ready and waiting,"
Ezra answered automatically.
"The Cardassians are firing,"
Alex shouted, and this time everyone on the bridge grabbed onto something. It came only a second later, sending more alarms screaming again through the bridge and lighting up more consoles. This time, they handled the after effects of the blast better. Still, the interlude would be brief. Chris estimated they had only a minute before the enemy made another attempt to encourage the Mavericks' surrender.
"Shields are still holding,"
Ezra's voice was taut as he studied the readings.
"They are playing with us, Captain."
"Oh, I knew that. The Dominion is trying to soften us up, trying to make it easier for us to surrender."
Ezra snorted in derision at the ridiculous presumption of the enemy. Who did they think they were facing? Despite the Cardassian show of force, the Dominion could not afford to damage the Maverick too substantially, not if they wanted the ship's computer core. For this mission in Federation space to be considered any kind of success, they would have to take the Maverick intact. While the phaser bombardment they were currently hurling at the Maverick might convince another commander to surrender, they dealt with Chris Larrabee. Where the captain was concerned, not even Ezra was foolish enough to bet against him.
"Alex, take over from Ezra. I want you to man the decryption protocol. Ezra, as soon as we're in position, I want you to fire a full spread of quantum torpedoes at the Cardassian ships. No warning shots. I'm going to assume you know the best place to hit them. I want them out of commission permanently. We've got enough troubles without trying to swat the flies out of our face."
"With absolute pleasure, Captain."
Ezra grinned, more than happy to comply with that order. He only wished Lamar was present to hear Chris describing the five Cardassian battlecruisers as irritating insects. Then, Chris left his chair to approach the helm.
"We'll only have a few seconds between the Cardassians being hit and the Jem'Hadar moving in on us. I want you to break through the Cardi lines and put as much distance between us and this fleet as you can. We can't outrun them, but I want a little maneuvering room."
"I'll get her through,"
the Vulcan drawled, reflecting Chris's calm.
"You can bet on it."
Mary wondered how these men could remain so composed. Inside, she felt like a thousand bundles of exposed nerve endings. Yet it wasn't just Chris and Vin holding themselves together. Even JD kept his fear reined, and Mary retreated to her Kathia disciplines to maintain her calm.
"Captain, do engineering."
The captain waited for a response from the mechanical heart of the Maverick.
"Pemberton's here."
There was more than a bit of tension in Julia's voice when she answered Chris. In the background noise, they could hear footsteps running back and forth across the deck and the excited chatter of people under pressure hard at work. It took no great insight for Chris to know the engineering team was working hard to repair the damage caused by phaser bombardment from the Cardassian ships.
"How are we doing?"
"We're just peachy down here. Do you think we might move the ship out of the way when they fire, Captain? It just seems like a terrible waste of time for them if we just sort of sat there and let them blow us to pieces."
Chris felt the same wave of affection for Julia as Ezra did at that moment, and both men exchanged a knowing glance before Chris continued.
"Suggestion noted, Lieutenant. I'll see what I can do. In the meantime, I thought I might just warn you that Vin is going to hit maximum warp to get us out of here in a few seconds. I want you to divert all power to the front shields when that happens. We may have to punch our way through the Cardassian flank to get out of this net they've got us in."
"Understood, sir. When the time comes, you'll have all the power I got, even if I have to go out there and push."
"Thank you, Lieutenant."
Chris smiled faintly, recalling this same conversation over the skies of Earth.
"The Vorta is waiting,"
Buck informed Chris, who immediately faced a blank view screen.
"Let's see him."
The viewer flipped briefly before Fanion appeared on screen again.
"Captain,"
he greeted as soon as he sighted Chris. Once again, that sickeningly syrupy voice contaminated Chris's bridge.
"Your ship cannot take much more of our fire. Why not surrender? I give you my word of honor that no harm will befall any member of your crew."
"That's very kind of you."
Chris pretended to consider the man's words.
"I give you my word of honor that when the time comes,
I will provide you with the same.
As the Vorta's brow wrinkled in confusion, trying to understand what those enigmatic words meant, Chris changed the tone of his voice from cordial into menacing.
Computer, transmit frequency code Navajo authorization, Captain Larrabee, Christopher, access code, Agrippa.
Command codes verified.
What?
The Vorta stared at him through the view screen, bewildered at what just happened.
What have you done?
The Vorta did not understand, and Chris did not expect him to. Despite the end of the border wars, Starfleet remained unconvinced their troubles with Cardassia were over. The Federation, by nature, did not make war, but a century of exploration had given it advantages it did not use unless in times of great crisis. Next to Section 31, the best secret in the Federation was the Navajo Bureau. Named after the famed Navajo code talkers of the 20th century, the Bureau's code breakers had no peer anywhere in the Alpha Quadrant. Not long after the end of hostilities with Cardassia, the Bureau cracked and cataloged the shield modulation codes of every Cardassian ship constructed in the last 20 years. It was a secret known only to a few, and even with the Dominion War raging, Starfleet only made use of this ace in the hole when absolutely necessary. With access to the shield modulation of a Cardassian ship, they could configure torpedoes to pass through Cardassian shields with no trouble at all.
Adjustment made for shield modulation. Firing quantum torpedoes from all bays at full spread.
On screen, Chris ordered as the Cardassian ships appeared on the viewer just before the volley of torpedoes as relaunched caught up with them. Quantum torpedoes, designed by the Federation to pierce the armor of Borg ships, impacted against the hull of the battlecruisers. Blinding white light glared at them through the view screen as the detonations flared across hulls of all five vessels. The attack had taken the enemy ships entirely by surprise.
Now then, get us out of here, maximum warp.
The Maverick was already moving forward at Vin's hand, but Chris's order prompted Vin to hit maximum, propelling the starship forward with a mighty lurch. Streaking through the clouds of exploding plasma eruptions, the Maverick was a streak of blue and gray as it punched through the enemy line. Under Vin's capable hands, the vessel zigzagged through the disabled Cardassian ships, barely avoiding collision in its haste to leave the scene of the battle.
The Jem'Hadar are giving chase.
Multiple blips appeared on her console screen once the Dominion ships realized the Maverick had slipped through the Cardassian net. Their thrusters fired, giving chase swiftly. The Romulan ship was still holding back, no doubt allowing the Jem'Hadar to do the dirty work instead.
Two Cardassian ships have been destroyed. The other three have sustained heavy damage. I doubt they can even maintain life support without help.
Two down, Chris returned to his command chair. That still leaves eight, and we are nowhere out of trouble.
With your permission, Captain, I'd like to give you a little more breathing room with our Jem'Hadar friends.
By all means.
They were already living on borrowed time, and Chris knew perfectly well Buck could surprise him now and then.
Let's slow them down a bit.
Buck spoke up now he had the captain's permission to act.
Alex, vent all our waste plasma.
Aye, sir.
Alex complied immediately and let her fingers fly over her console screen, aware of what Buck had in mind.
We have vented all plasma.
Ezra, if you will be so kind.
I am never one to turn down the request of a superior, well, a higher-ranking officer, anyway. One torpedo at your service.
Thank you.
Buck gave the security man a look.
Fire at will.
Torpedoes hurtled through the darkened space and disappeared into the sea of plasma. The area around the Maverick flared with white energy as the plasma ignited behind them. Everyone immediately shielded their eyes, but Vin remained oblivious to the display of light and color that would temporarily disrupt the Jem'Hadar sensors. Navigating through his console to avoid any flash blindness, Vin pushed the Maverick harder and faster than it ever traveled before. The ship was at warp 9.98, but Vin knew he had only a short time to fly the Maverick at this speed before the energy requirements to maintain those power levels drained vital systems like shields and life support.
Captain, I'm approaching warp 9.9.
Taking the Maverick to warp 9.99 was a command decision that had to come from Chris.
Captain, main power is draining.
Alex warned from her station.
We can't sustain this speed and keep our shields at full strength.
Where are the Jemadar ships? Chris felt the pressure but refused to let it affect him. His crew needed to know he could save them. What's their status?
They're still attempting to recalibrate their sensor array.
Ezra responded.
They are lagging.
Only one chance now, and Chris had to take it. It was dangerous, and he knew it, but the Maverick had no chance in hell of winning this by playing it safe. This battle was so stacked against them, the only way Chris could think of surviving, to say nothing at all about winning, was to play against the house and to play it wild. Bring us about.
Captain?
The order astonished Vin and the rest of the bridge. They just spent considerable energy attempting to escape the battlefield, and now the captain was taking them back?
You heard me. Turn us around now.
Vin need not make a second inquiry because Chris's tone told him the captain would not take kindly to being questioned. Praying that Chris had some secret weapon up his sleeve to allow him to disable the shields of the Jem'Hadar ship as easily as they had done to the Cardassians, Vin steered the Maverick to veer back the way it came in a tight arch. The great vessel executed the move flawlessly, even though his console flashed a warning at maintaining this speed. She accelerated at extreme velocity, nursing wounds from enemy fire at full shield strength. Something was going to give soon.
Set course directly for the Warbird.
For the Warbird.
Buck stared at Chris, unsure what his captain was playing at, and it was his job to know. Chris might have tolerated Buck's confusion at any other time, but not today.
You have trouble hearing me, Commander? If the Dominion wants the Maverick so bad, they can have her. Right down their throats.
Buck wanted to respond, but Chris's hard eyes made him think better of it, and he remained silent. Alex and Ezra were smart enough to keep quiet, while Mary and JD hoped their inexperience was the reason they did not understand what Chris was attempting to do.
Ezra, arm all phaser banks.
Chris ordered once the Maverick changed course and began its suicidal run at the Tesmeme.
I want you to fire all phasers. I want so much firepower in the space between the Jem'Hadar and us that they'll have no choice but to get clear.
Yes, sir.
Ezra answered, capable of performing that minor miracle but unaware of how they were going to survive when the Jem'Hadar came at them full throttle.
Viewer on,
before them, the view screen revealed a terrifying scene as they headed back the way they had originally come. The wreckage of the Cardassian ships floated past, adrift like the flotsam of sinking passenger liners of old. Except here, the bodies did not disappear into the depths. They sailed endlessly through the void, their faces a frozen mask of pain and shock. The other three ships were floating dead in space, their crews frantically repairing the damage as several billion tons of starship bore down on them.
Captain, you must reduce speed. I can't maintain shield strength at warp 9.9. We're taking a heavy pounding from the enemy. The shields are going to buckle.
Sorry, Julia, can't talk right now, but you will maintain shield strength.
But...
Bridge out.
Chris cut off the channel. In the view screen, he could see Ezra's handiwork as volley after volley of phaser blasts bombarded the Jem'Hadar ships trying to avoid being destroyed by the Maverick's formidable arsenal. The Jem'Hadar ships were still firing and some of their return fire penetrated the wall of phaser blasts. He could see Alex fighting to maintain shield integrity, sealing up the gaps Julia could not carry out in engineering. He knew he was pushing his ships beyond safety limits, but they would not get out of this playing it safe. If they did not reach the Warbird before she cloaked, they would be in serious trouble, and heaven help them if the Jem'Hadar figured that out as well. The Maverick continued to shudder uneasily as it surged forward. The hits from the Jem'Hadar ships were becoming more frequent because phaser power was dwindling, and soon, they would only have torpedoes to launch at the enemy. Each hit against the Maverick rocked the ship precariously, and Chris could feel the floor beneath him drop for a moment before they regained attitude control. Every warning system in the bridge sounded its alert, adding its voice to the voices calling him to give up the course he was taking.
One Jem'Hadar ship destroyed.
Chris noticed the flare of brilliance at the edge of the view screen at Alex's exclamation.
One more has fallen back with severe damage. The other two are still maintaining pursuit.
As she made that last statement, her console hissed. Alex barely leapt out of the way as it exploded, sending dangerous projectiles of glass at her. Having suffered a similar injury once, the science officer knew how to avoid injuring herself a second time.
You okay?
Buck asked as she picked herself up from the floor.
Chris,
whatever you're going to do, do it fast.
Romulan warbird dead ahead.
Vin answered Buck's question for Chris. Chris looked up and saw the Tasmin preparing to face whatever the Maverick had in mind. Chris doubted even the Vorta could have foreseen what he was about to say next. Vin. Chris took a deep breath and hoped he was right about this.
Take her to ramming speed.
Chapter 12. The Larrabee Hat Trick. Ramming speed. The words hung in the air for a few seconds because no one actually believed they heard it. Even Vin found his fingers frozen over the controls, wondering if he heard wrong, that his captain had not just commanded him to put the Maverick on a suicide course. Unfortunately, it was no aberration. Chris stood behind Vin, waiting for the helmsman to do as instructed, so Vin had no choice but to obey. It wasn't due to the loyalty to his captain but because of the friendship and trust between both men. Chris would never consciously endanger his ship without a plan. Vin took a deep breath and a leap of faith before he laid in the new course, sending the ship surging ahead. Sirens screamed frantically, signaling the collision and the ship's acceleration into warp 9.99.
Captain, I am reading multiple fractures in the structural integrity of the ship. Sir, we have to slow down.
Alex cautioned after studying the readings produced by the Mavericks heading towards the warbird. Chris ignored her.
Maintain speed and course, Vin.
Buck could see Chris wasn't about to change his mind and tapped his comm badge for ship-wide communications. Like Vin, Buck knew Chris had a plan, but whether the ship would survive was another thing entirely. It was a gamble, this thing the captain planned, but Buck recognized their dire circumstances to see it was the only way. Playing it safe would not get them out of this, but he hoped playing it wild did not let the Maverick end up the same way.
All hands, this is the first officer. Brace for impact.
Buck could imagine what was taking place across the Maverick without seeing it himself. At this moment, crew members were assuming crash positions. Parents placed their children in safe corners of the room, padding their hiding places with cushions and other soft material to lessen the force of the impact if a collision occurred. At this point, Buck was unprepared to say whether it would happen. Engineering. Chris spoke up, and the ship's computer immediately opened communication to the desired deck. The captain seemed to be the only one unfazed by what was happening. Buck wondered how Chris rose above his ear until the first officer realized there was no room for the captain to feel fear. He was too busy trying to save all their lives.
Captain.
Julia called from engineering. Her anxiety was plain. Mostly because she knew better than anyone that told this was taking on the Maverick.
You have to slow down. I can't maintain shield strength if you push the ship this hard with all phasers firing. As it is, we're having trouble maintaining structural integrity. The Maverick isn't designed for this kind of stress.
Julia, I want you to take the phasers offline and deflect all energy to maintain this speed. Divert the extra energy from the phaser banks to bolster our front shields. The structural integrity will hold. We're not keeping this pace for much longer. Can you do that for me, Lieutenant?
Julia did not answer for a few seconds, but those who knew the engineer understood she would agree to the captain's request, even if she had yet to say it.
All right, sir. I'll do what I can, but if the structural integrity goes, it won't matter if we don't have shields. She'll crack apart like an egg.
Noted. Chris ended the line.
The warbird is hailing us.
JD stared at Chris with the hope the attempted communication might convince the captain to reduce speed.
Shall I put them through, Captain?
Negative,
Chris answered abruptly, turning his attention to Ezra. The security officer stared at the console before him because, at this moment, aware he was all that was keeping the Jem'Hadar ships from bombarding the Maverick into scrap. Ezra had some idea of the gamble Chris was attempting, and while he lauded playing the odds, he was not confident fortune was in their favor today. Particularly after the captain ordered the phasers taken offline.
Ezra, I want you to keep those Jem'Hadar ships off our back until we can lock onto the warbird. Use all the photon torpedoes if you have to, but do it. I want a clear path to the Vorta.
I shall fend them off one way or another, Captain.
Ezra nodded, showing no signs the occasion was getting to him even if the urgency was pressing up against his spine. Three Jem'Hadar ships were closing in on the Maverick with relentless determination to sway the great ship from continuing its course towards the warbird. Chris could see the Romulan ship looming larger on the screen. The damaged Cardassian ships limped away, having seen what was coming and had no wish to be caught in the explosive wake of a galaxy-class starship. The blast radius resulting from such a catastrophe could destroy every one of their ships because of their disabled shields. Now I'll talk to them. JD sighed with relief and immediately opened the communication frequency between the two ships. The Vorta appeared on the screen in less than a second, nowhere as calm as he had been during their earlier conversation. Even Lamar in the background seemed a little nervous, and Chris derived some measure of satisfaction in making them sweat a little.
Captain, what are you doing?
The Vorta demanded upon seeing the human, his response revealing genuine fear. A second later, he composed himself enough for his smooth voice to return once more.
You cannot seriously think we believe you would destroy yourself and your ship.
I am never anything but serious when it comes to my ship.
Chris's manner was a stark contrast to the palpable urgency in the Vorta's expression.
If you had any sense, you would be a little more concerned about yours.
You would not dare risk the lives of all those on board with this pathetic attempt at a bluff.
Lamar bellowed before a sharp glare from Fanion silenced him again.
And yet, I'm not the one who seems to be sweating.
Chris wished he could have 2 minutes alone with the Cardassian inside his brig after the part he played in this hoax. Chris would let Alex have her revenge upon Lamar the way she intended when the bastard first came on board the Maverick.
If you intend to frighten us.
The Vorta said after when he ordered one of his Jem'Hadar to ensure Lamar did not intrude on his discussion with Chris, much to the delight of Alex.
I think you will find the Dominion does not scare easily.
Romulan warbird 5,000 kilometers and closing.
Alex announced loud enough for the enemy to hear.
And neither does the Federation. So either you and your Jem'Hadar ships withdraw, or I'll give you the Maverick for however long it takes for the blast to vaporize all of us. Now unless I have your surrender, I'll keep my ship on this heading.
Surrender? We outnumber your vessel 7-1. Do you really think this pitiful attempt will make us capitulate?
Chris did not think he had the faintest chance of forcing them to surrender, but then surrender was not what this was about. The more Chris kept Fanion talking, the less time the Vorta would have to consider his situation clearly. The Maverick continued to shudder, and Chris could feel the vibrations in the hull and through the floor. On the seat beside him, Mary's fingers dug into her armrest, her knuckles turning white from fear. He wished he could reassure her they were not all going to die, but this was not a promise he could make with certainty. The view screen showed the detonation of multiple photon torpedoes against Jem'Hadar shields as they attempted to absorb the formidable arsenal flung at them. Still, the enemy was not simply taking fire but returning it with equal intensity. Each blast impacting against the shields caused a low reverberation throughout the duranium-plated hull of the Maverick until everyone could feel the imminent structural collapse. Julia warned with every strained groan of the ship.
Romulan ship dead ahead!
Alex exclaimed as the space between the Maverick and the warbird suddenly evaporated. Chris held his breath in anticipation, feeling his heart pound in his chest because this was the moment of truth. In less than 10 seconds, the Maverick would either emerge victorious in this most ancient show of strength between two opponents or be destroyed in the collision that would take out both ships. Then, like an answer from above, the Romulan ship in front of them shimmered.
Ezra, forget the Jem'Hadar, fire all quantum torpedoes dead ahead, full spread.
Oh good lord, yes!
It took Ezra a second to carry out the order once he understood what Chris had done. It was sheer brilliance and pure Chris Larrabee.
Torpedoes away!
The warbird was still cloaking when the spread of torpedoes met their mark. The explosion was spectacular and traveled across the hull of the enormous ship, sending heat and exploding gases in all directions. However, Chris did not take time to enjoy the sight because the Maverick still headed straight for her. Chris did not want the Maverick to be anywhere in the vicinity when the Tasmim reached critical mass.
Hard to port, Vin.
Now, using more speed than Vin ever thought he possessed, the helmsman performed the maneuver, forcing them into a tight arc that pulled sharply away from the exploding warbird with a fraction of a second to spare. The Maverick decelerated as she pulled away, dropping her speed from the perilous 9.99 to a more sensible velocity to ease their engineer's nerves.
You crazy son of a bitch!
Buck laughed out loud, slapping Chris on the back, unable to help himself as the insanity Chris forced upon them earlier evolved into sheer genius.
That was outstanding, Captain.
Even JD could not keep his exuberance from showing as he stared in adoration at his hero. Chris was not about to accept all their applause just yet. There were still three Jem'Hadar ships in pursuit, and they were far from safe.
Vin, get us to the Vicari's Quasar at best speed.
What just happened?
Mary asked. She knew they had scored a victory as the Maverick put more distance between itself and the final conflagration of the Tesmeme. The entire bridge came alive with cheers at its complete destruction, and she could see friends cheering at the spectacular feat of tactical genius displayed by their captain.
The captain just pulled a rabbit out of his hat, that's what.
Buck grinned.
I don't understand.
She looked at Chris, unable to be unaffected by the first officer's grin but still somewhat confused by what transpired.
By heading towards the Warbird at ramming speed, Chris scared Fanaean enough to make the Vorta order the Tasmeme into raising its cloak to escape and, as most of us know when a Romulan ship raises its cloak,
it has to drop its shields.
Mary exclaimed when the light of understanding reached her as well, and she stared at Chris with a broadening smile of admiration.
Nicely done, Captain.
Thanks,
Chris answered abruptly, hardly noticing the compliment. His attention was on the Jem'Hadar ships bearing down on the Maverick.
We're not out of this yet.
In achieving that minor miracle, he'd pushed his ship to its limits, and even with the destruction of the Warbird, the threat was by no means ended. With three Jem'Hadar ships pounding the Maverick relentlessly during the time it had taken to force the Vorta's hand, the starship's energy reserves were dwindling rapidly. They had little time before the shields buckled utterly. All it took was another massive show of force from the Jem'Hadar, and they would be wide open to attack.
Engineering, what's our status?
This time Julia did not answer promptly, and although Ezra kept the Jem'Hadar at bay with more torpedo spreads, he looked up in concern at the continued silence.
Lieutenant Pemberton, come in.
I'm sorry, Captain.
There was hissing and escaping gases in the background, and engineering appeared to be a state of utter pandemonium.
We're losing power. The phaser bombardment from the enemy ships has weakened the magnetic containment field of the antimatter core. I am trying to prevent a core breach. We've lost 40% of reserve power, and there are hull breaches on decks 12, 27, and 31. We've also had emergency decompression in the main shuttle bay. There are fluctuations in our shield strength. I have my people trying to reinforce it, or the Jem'Hadar are going to transport straight through our shields.
Noted, Lieutenant. Chris expected all this, but hearing it put so starkly was still jarring. Julia, you did a good job. You held us together.
He made that final offering of gratitude. Even though Julia was not on the bridge, the part she played was no less vital. If they were to be destroyed today, Chris wanted her to know that.
Thank you, sir. Now, I've got to get back to my ship. You've left a hell of a mess for me to clean up, Captain.
I apologize. Larrabee out.
Captain.
Alex spoke up the minute he ended the conversation with engineering. Something in her voice made him swivel around in his chair to face her. Her troubled expression put him on guard immediately.
What is it?
One Jem'Hadar ship is maintaining pursuit. In fact, it's put all its power into reaching us at any cost.
Alex met Chris's gaze, her confusion obvious, and it was clearly something she disliked.
Aren't they all?
Buck asked. The worried expression on both their faces heightened the gnawing in his own gut.
No. The other two have fallen back to safer speeds. They are still in pursuit, but they're not going at it as hard as the lead ship. It's pursuing us at warp 9.99, diverting all power to propulsions just to reach us.
Can we outrun it?
Mary asked nervously, hating it when Chris went quiet because it implied the worst.
No. That stunt with the Romulan warbird has drained all our systems. If we try matching its speed, Julia won't be able to stabilize the core, and we will have a warp core breach. The Dominion won't have to finish us off. We'll go up like a Roman candle.
Thank you for that colorful description.
Ezra winced as he tried to guess what stratagem the lone Jem'Hadar ship was employing. Did it not know that the minute it came within sights of the Maverick's targeting screen, he was going to blast it out of the sky?
Commander, I do not understand what this vessel is attempting to accomplish. Surely the enemy knows one Jem'Hadar ship does not have the firepower to incapacitate us.
Chris saw the Jem'Hadar ship closing and watched Ezra prepare to fire when suddenly, the vessel moved into a series of neat maneuvers, skillfully avoiding the torpedoes. The phasers were offline, and to fire again. Ezra had to recalibrate to take another shot. During this margin of time, the Jem'Hadar ship sped up further, pouring so much into its acceleration that its power reserves would soon be exhausted, and they would lay dead in space. Chris continued to stare at the ship, trying to understand what it was doing. As Ezra said, it certainly did not have the firepower to cause significant damage to the Maverick. Unless a hideous notion unfolded inside his mind.
Oh shit, Vin, evasive maneuvers now. It's not going to shoot us. It's going to ram us.
No sooner than he said it, Chris watched as the Jem'Hadar warship used the narrow margin of time it took Ezra to realign the targeting scanner of the torpedoes to close the distance between the two vessels. It seemed almost biblical, like David and Goliath, Chris thought absurdly. The smaller craft slammed hard into the Maverick's port nacelle. The impact was nothing less than devastating. If they thought the blast taken by the Maverick when the five Cardassian ships fired on them was terrible, it paled compared to the collision of the Jem'Hadar warship against the Maverick. Almost everyone went flying as the ship lurched sideways. It threw Chris to the floor. Alex hit the wall while Ezra tumbled like a rolling dervish across the carpeted deck. Consoles on several workstations exploded, raining glass around their ears. A length of conduit broke loose and plunged towards JD. The ensign barely had time to leap out of his chair to avoid electrocution. The main viewer shattered, and Chris threw his body over Mary, covering her from the tidal wave of glass raining down on them. Vin dove beneath the helm controls to avoid severe injury since he was closest to the monitor. In the chaotic aftermath, crimson emergency lights fell over the bridge. For a few seconds, all was quiet following the collision. Everyone was too afraid to move until shrill alerts screamed loudly in their ears, cutting through their shock and reminding them they were bridge officers, and they had a job to do. Alex staggered to her feet, wiping the blood off her cheek as she returned to one of the few consoles not destroyed. She cleared the glass off the screen to see what was happening and then wished she hadn't.
The two Jem'Hadar ships are closing,
she said with a strained voice as she saw the captain getting to his feet to help Mary. Vin returned to his position at the con, but not before he glanced her way to assure himself she was all right. Ezra, too, was on his feet and returning to his station at tactical. The sight of the security chief's face was red, and his cheek was swelling with discoloring from where he hit the floor.
Damage report.
The enemy ship hit one of our nacelles, destroying three decks. Our warp engines are offline, and we are floating dead in space. By the looks of it, engineering is attempting to reroute power so that we have partial impulse.
What about our shields?
Chris asked, dreading the worst as he listened to the state of his ship. At this moment, he could not even bring himself to ask how many people had been on those obliterated three decks.
We have no shields. The collision overloaded the shield generator. I'm reading massive destabilization to the warp core, so I'm assuming engineering is attempting to correct that problem before attempting to deal with our shields and our lack of warp capability.
Captain!
JD fairly shouted. The young man was kneeling over Buck, lying on his back, unconscious. A piece of glass had embedded itself deep into the man's left side, and his head was bleeding profusely from a gash incurred when the view screen shattered.
He's hurt bad.
Sick bay.
Mary tapped her comm badge immediately, trying to feel helpful in the face of all this damage.
We need a medical crew in here right now. Commander Wilmington is injured.
I'm sending a team immediately.
Nathan Jackson replied almost immediately.
We've got lots of hurt down here, Captain.
He needs someone now. Get somebody up here.
The captain hurried to his old friend. Mary was already there, having some medical training in her past, but not enough to give Buck the help he needed.
How is he?
He's bad, Chris. If he doesn't get help soon.
What?
JD demanded.
What's going to happen?
Ensign, get to your station. Mary will take care of Buck. I want you to send a Priority 1 distress call to any Federation ship in the area. We should be out of their jamming range now.
Chris wanted JD's mind off Buck for the moment until the computer's cool dulcet tone spoke up and offered the perfect distraction.
Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
They were being boarded.